Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Fine Food Friday, October 15th. I'm Ray Graff. Oh, yeah, it's flower hour time again, and we welcome author and baker Amy Halloran back to the show to answer your questions about all things grain, from breads to gluten-free baking to pancakes to biscuits. If you have a question for the ambassador of flour, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. We had an interesting discussion just a few moments ago about the philosophy of bread and the symbolism, the Jungian archetypes of loaves of bread. And we'll try to recreate that exciting bit of discussion for you coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. In the studio today is the ambassador of flour, Amy Halloran. She is here to help you with all of your baking questions. Amy is an author, an educator, an advocate for food security, and she's been on this show many times. And, you know, I've realized she is a bread philosopher. And we'll talk about that in a minute. She was the first manager of Troy's Waterfront Farmers Market. She really likes grain. Her book, The New Bread Basket, chronicles the revival of regional grain production. If you have a question at all, give us a shout. 800-348-2551. Maybe it's about pancakes. Maybe it's about muffins. Maybe it's about loaves of bread. And we'll talk about the philosophy of the bread coming up on this program. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Amy Halloran, welcome back. How are you?
Oh, Ray, it's so fun to be here.
It's great to have you on this program. And you just made my head explode before the show began, and you said you were talking about loaves of bread and the symbolism, and I think you're onto something there. Explain for our listeners what we were talking about.
Okay, let's see where to enter this story. Well, first off, as I was driving here, I was listening to the Moth Radio Hour.
Right.
And
good
listening
for you.
To somebody else's stories will always help you get into your storytelling mode.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking about how bread is really just all the stories we tell each other. You take a look at a slice of bread, it's shaped like a house. A house, a slice of bread, these are symbols that catch all kinds of feelings that we have about our ideas of comfort and safety and satiety and self-care and caring for others. Everyone should fit in our house. Everything should fit between two slices of bread. Bread is the stories we tell each other.
I love that, and it makes me not want to eat this piece of bread because I don't want to eat the house. You know what I mean?
Well, you're eating your stories so that you can tell more stories. How's that?
I like it. And the only problem with you saying this on the air now is somebody's going to steal that idea.
No. I have to have faith that the world will not let us down in every living moment.
Let the world know it's Amy Halloran's idea. Our number here is 800-348-2551. What'd you bring today?
Oh, my goodness. I brought so much fun stuff. So, I'm in love with this cookbook, Southern Ground. It's huge. It's from a flour mill in Asheville, North Carolina, called Carolina Ground. And the cookbook is just filled with recipes from bakers all over the South who use this beautiful stone ground flour.
And this is what this bread is made of?
No, that bread is actually just my standard bread. That is a sourdough loaf. My friend Adrienne Hale did a communal loaf, is what she calls that. And it's that's rye, wheat, water, olive oil, salt, and rye starter.
All right, we'll get to that in a minute. I've interrupted your flow, and I feel terrible about that. Continue about the book.
Okay, so this cookbook, it's full of profiles of the bakers throughout the South who use the flour. So number one, it's got lots of people in there.
Yeah.
And I love that. Anything with lots of people, nice crowd. And then it has these incredible recipes. The cookies that have the salt on top are called salted and malted cookies.
Mm.
And those are really quite a thing. Take a bite, Ray.
Can I have a bite? Or you keep talking while I chew.
So that is filled with some malted barley flour and rye flour. Rye makes wonderful cookies, as I think Ray is experiencing.
Yep.
Yep. malted barley is what is used to make beer. But you grind that up, or you have your miller and maltster grind it up for you into a flour. And it's just an incredible ingredient. It's really the secret to what I, everything I bake, not everything, but like my pancakes, they go through the roof because they have a little barley malt from Valley Malt and ground up grain over in Hadley, Massachusetts. Totally wonderful thing. It's, if you ever have made homemade grape nuts, and who hasn't, Ray?
Well, I don't know.
You can't get real homemade grape nuts without malted barley flour.
Oh, I'll be darned. I did not know that. The cookie is amazing.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, Zach the engineer was looking through the glass from Master Control before the show, and you and I were sniffing from this bag of flour.
Yep.
I don't know what he was thinking. That's okay. It's completely legal. It's completely, it really, that flour has character just in aroma.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. So the process of malting, it starts the grains sprouting so that the sugars are more available to brewers. That's the general reason you have malt. But for bakers, you add it for sweetener, you add it for some other functionality in bread baking. But I use it as a little bit of a sweetener, and it's just enchanting.
I mean, these cookies, now I've had one bite, and I could probably eat 40 of these because they just keep pulling you back. Is it the salt that does that, or the combo of the salt and the sweet? They're not overly sweet.
Nope. I think it's everything. I mean, so I just think just about every cookie should be made with rye flour. Rye flour, that's got to be pulling you in too. The malted barley is definitely, it's got a sweetener with, you know, layers of flavors that I can't even describe. But I think it's all of it. And then you put a little salt on top.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amy Halloran is our guest. It's Grains Today, Flour Hour, 800-348-2551. Before we get to the phones, this email from Jacob in Cohoes. What are your thoughts on the ideal balance between cornstarch, flour, baking powder, etc., for tempura batter?
Oh, my goodness.
Have you ever done that?
You know, I haven't made my own tempura batter.
Oh, my God.
The only thing we really fry at home are pakoras, which you just wrap in chickpea flour.
What's a pakora?
A pakora is vegetables that it's an Indian snack.
Yeah.
And so you take sliced vegetables and you put it with this chickpea flour, cumin, water, and just do that. And then the other thing is that I fry are donuts, and they don't take a tempura batter. So
oh my God, tempura donuts. Ding, ding, ding. We
have
a
right?
winner, right? Oh,
we could go way far, but that's a really interesting question. And I bet that I know I use cornstarch when I bake tofu in the oven with some spices.
Yeah.
That's got to have a lot of good crunchiness making capacity.
Well said. Let's take one call here before we take a break. 800-348-2551, the number, if you would like to talk to the bread philosopher, Amy Halloran. Neil in Nassau. Neil, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Amy. It's great to talk to you. I'm interested in the flour that I use in my bread machine. I make about a loaf a week, and sometimes I buy flour that's labeled for bread machines and sometimes general-purpose flour. That's my first question, and my next question is about the machines themselves. But what does Amy think about that?
Now, before we start, you're not one of those snobs who says, don't use a bread maker, right?
Any way you get to your bread is absolutely legal.
Thank you,
and wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you,
all right.
Thank you, Amy.
Go ahead.
But what's the question about the flour?
Two things about the flour. One is, I bought a lifetime supply of flour at the start of the quarantine, or actually when the flour came back into the markets. Sometimes it's labeled variously, but I'm wondering, do I need flour for my Zojirushi special that says bread flour or bread machine flour on it? Can I get away with other types of flour besides so-called bread machine flour?
Well, I think that I would make sure if you don't have bread machine flour, use a recipe that's for a bread machine, but calls for, say, all-purpose flour.
Now, I'll bet you, Neil, that Amy has never used a bread maker.
No, I have.
Really?
I have, but it mostly, I bought it once because I felt like as a flour aficionado, I really needed to have an understanding of it. But, you know, we go through bread so industriously in our house that I'd have that thing going all day long. So it just didn't work for us.
Well, in our house, Neil, we use regular flour, and it works fine.
Oh, it does.
Well,
good.
But again, you're looking at someone who can't boil water. I'm not the one who's doing this, but I do procure the flour, and it's just regular flour.
In terms
flour,
of,
then.
Have you experimented with it, Neil, and found, what have you found?
Well, I have, actually, I make it 2-to-1 with whole wheat flour. And after decades of experimentation, I produce a credible loaf, but it took a lot of experimenting. And I just, you know, I buy the King Arthur whole wheat flour from the supermarket, and I mix that with white, usually general purpose flour or bread machine flour, and it produces a nice loaf. It's a heavy loaf, but it's very nice.
That's terrific. Good. You said you had a second question.
It's about storage. I've kept the flour in some airtight containers in a dark, cool place and a dry place, but I've got probably 20 pounds of it, and I'm wondering how long it lasts under good storage. Can I use it years later or only the date on the package?
So flour is, especially whole grain flour, is very fragile.
Really?
Yeah, because the whole grain flour has the bran and the germ, where the fats of a grain kernel are stored. And when you grind that, it's volatile. You've exposed the fats to air.
So will it go rancid?
Will go rancid.
Interesting.
So for whole wheat flour, I would suggest storing that in a freezer. For the white flour, I would suggest it doesn't need it so much. But if you've only got 20 pounds of flour, I'm hoping you go through that sooner. Have some friends over. Make a lot of pizza.
Good plan. Hey, Neil, we got to take a break. Amy Halloran's our guest. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And you can email us as well. voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Vox Pop, it's a Food Friday. Ray Graff with you, 800-348-2551. The number, 800-348-2551. The email address, voxpop@wamc.org. Amy Halloran is here. Always fun when the ambassador of flour joins us. This email from Tom. Tom writes, 40 years ago, I read about and used in bread baking the so-called Cornell flour, which consisted of 1 cup of unbleached white flour plus 1 tablespoon of soy flour plus 1 teaspoon of wheat germ for every cup of flour. It tasted great and supposedly added quite a bit of nutrition to the loaf. Any experience with this?
Absolutely, absolutely. So the Cornell bread recipe, I wish I could recall the era it was developed, because that would tell us a whole nother thing about home economics and thinking about food in America.
Yeah.
But I can't remember the year.
Somebody will know.
Yeah. But the Cornell bread recipe is really cool. And it is, the soy flour is adding protein, and the wheat germ is adding, I believe it's B vitamins through there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a good recipe.
How does it taste?
Great.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's a good recipe.
What's your favorite flour to use?
For bread? I mean, it varies, you know?
For bread.
So, for bread, I think I really like, I mean, it varies, Ray. I love to make so many kinds of bread.
You love all your children, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
All right, Amy Halloran's our guest. Back to the phones we go. 800-348-2551 is the number. Barry is in Albany. Barry, you're up.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about rugelach, which is a traditional kind of Jewish cookie that's made with cream cheese and butter in the dough.
Yeah. Hey, Barry, before we get going here, could you go off speakerphone by any chance?
If
you can't, it's okay. But you sound like an old Phil Spector recording where it's a heavy reverb, you know?
Yeah, I'm having a hard time can't get the phone control
right
to come up.
No sweat. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry I interrupted.
Okay. So I've made it several times, varying the proportions of the cream cheese and the butter and the flour. But the consistency of the cookie always seems to come out kind of almost leathery-like. And I don't know how to get it to be more of a cookie consistency.
Well, I think that the thing you're going for with rugelach is you're essentially making a pastry dough. And pastry gets kind of leathery if it has too much liquid. So I'm wondering if perhaps your cream cheese is, the lighter kind or the new facial, or if you're handling the dough too much once you add all of your ingredients. Because basically with, pie dough or pastry dough or this particular cookie dough, which is going for pastry, if you get too much gluten activity, it's going to be tough. And so when you make this stuff, once you add the liquid to it, you want to handle it as lightly as possible. Just bring it together, first incorporate your fats pretty well with the flour, and then just enough liquid to bring it together, and then don't mix it, because that'll develop the gluten and make it leathery.
Aha. Uh-huh. Barry.
I'm looking at a recipe I've tried that I got off the internet, and the only liquid is a third of a cup of sour cream.
Well, that's liquid still.
So you're saying I should cut the butter and the cream cheese into the flour.
Yep.
And the other ingredients, then add the sour cream and handle it as little as possible.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
I'll try it.
Good luck.
Hey, Barry, next time Amy is on, let us know how you did. Thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Jim is in Adams, Massachusetts. Hello there, Jim.
Yay, Ray.
Hi.
Hello, Amy.
Hi.
Amy, are you cognizant of the fact that why we're so attracted to grains and grain products as humans is that the fact that it hits the same receptors in our body as things like hard drugs like cocaine and heroin and things like that?
Did you know that? Well, she did bring a big bag of powder with her. I don't know if that's any indication,
yeah,
Jim.
You better have it analyzed, Drake.
Well, we took a sniff. It seems to be fine. Anyway, Amy, what do you think?
Well, what we're doing is we're getting away from gluten and using things like buckwheat flour, which buckwheat is not, and garbanzo bean flour, chickpea flour, black bean flour. I mean, they make perfectly good pastas with these bean flours and water. Buckwheat is not a wheat, in fact.
No, it's
in fact,
not. It's
not
related
even a grain.
To
it's
rhubarb.
It's classified as a fruit.
Yep. Buckwheat is related to rhubarb.
Rhubarb family, yes.
It's used like wheat, which is why it's named buckwheat.
Yep.
But I'm not familiar with this idea.
Comparison between hard drugs and bread?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a bit of a stretch, Jim.
No, that's I saw that somewhere, read it in an article.
Ah.
That's why we were so attracted. I know, it's actually a book I read it in. It hits the same receptors in our body as those things do, and it gives us that euphoric feeling, and we become quite addicted, and we evolve these grains beyond what they ever were when we first discovered them.
Wow. Well, Jim,
why people have a gluten intolerance is because of the hybridizing of wheat varieties over the centuries.
So is this book Grain Belly or Wheat Belly?
Nope.
Do you remember the name
of it? I think
it
might have been one of Michael Pollan's books on food.
Ah.
Okay.
Well, I think that...
or vegetarian myth.
There's a lot of stuff going on in our food system and in our environment. And I think that we are pillorying, we are putting grains on the steak. a lot. And we want to find one silver bullet to say that our lives are, to understand why we feel physically bad. But there are so many elements that are bringing down our health and changing the way that we interact with the world. We sit too much. We are people who are meant to walk and climb. And we are animals.
Body's
who are
meant to be
walk
active systems.
Yeah. Well, Jim,
so, not sit there and store everything up like a warehouse.
Way to bring
in
us down.
Out,
thank Jim.
In
thanks a lot, man. Have a good weekend.
All right.
Appreciate the call. Hi, boy. Jim is a regular correspondent. A-OK with me. You know, the drug thing with the bread, I'm not sure I see it, but that's okay. Jacob in Cohoes. Jacob, you're on.
Hi, I was the original emailer about the tempura batter. I just wanted to share my recipe.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Let's hear it.
So 2 cups corn flour, 1 cup flour, doesn't really matter, tablespoon of salt, a teaspoon of baking powder, and 1 egg white and 1 full egg.
But no cornstarch.
No, sorry, 2 cups cornstarch.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, okay, so 2 cups cornstarch, 1 cup flour. We got some baking powder, salt, and then an egg white.
Yep.
Awesome.
An egg white and then a full egg, and then you just pour in water until it gets to the consistency, like whisk in water until it gets to the consistency of like a milkshake.
That sounds really fun. What do you fry with that?
Everything. vegetables, shrimp, everything.
Well, that sounds great.
Great. I'll have to give it a try. Thanks a lot, Jacob.
Jacob, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Another regular correspondent to the show, Gina, in the 914. And the subject heading is croissants. Like lasagna or chili rellanos, croissants seem like an extraordinary amount of work. They should all be way more expensive. I'd rather just pay $2 for an excellent croissant and not even attempt it.
I think I'm with you.
Really?
I'm 1,000,000% with you. I do not. So that kind of, you see, I avoid saying French words because I will go to the steak of mispronunciation pretty fast.
That's all right.
But, you know, so that type of dough is called laminated doughs, and you are doing this process that's really amazing of incorporating butter into a regular dough. And when you see how a bakery does it, you know, they'll prep their butter first with rolling pins to get it to the right thickness. And it's this process of adding butter and rolling things out and adding butter and rolling things out. You betcha I'd spend $4 for a croissant.
Okay, so that's amazing. Usually you're gung-ho to try any of this stuff.
There's a few things that I would rather have people make.
Right. Amy Halloran's our guest. Very sensible today. 800-348-2551. The number, Suzanne and Beacon. Suzanne, you're up.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I am very much enjoying this discussion on flour, but I have a problem. I am not supposed to eat wheat of any kind or sugar or, you know, what might be an equivalent, like no molasses, no honey. So first, what kind of flour would you recommend that I can make breads, pancakes, muffins, whatever out of that has no wheat in it?
So there's a whole bunch of different products that you can buy that are geared to grain-free baking and recipes that are specific to grain-free. And so I would go with something that you really really can trust. Or if you're the type to make things yourself, you can mix up. Like I've made up a gluten-free bread flour, but I followed a recipe and I think it's nothing I do off the top of my head. Actually, no, that's not true. I used to not eat wheat, Ray.
Okay, now how could you forget that?
Oh, because, you know, I'm so in love with wheat. It's my best buddy. Had, you know, for a few years.
So you were estranged for a while.
We were estranged for a while. I had a case of eczema that I really, I went into
this. Now I remember that discussion.
Yep. So I would make, you know, a very nice mixture that's for cakes, cookies, and muffins or pancakes is to use a cup measure, and you're going to put 2 tablespoons of soy flour in the bottom of it. Here's that soy flour again.
Oh, yeah.
With brown rice flour, and that makes just a lovely combo.
But rice is considered a grain.
Ah, so I wasn't avoiding grains then. So you really...
No, my main interest is grain. No grains of any sort.
Yeah.
And so I miss bread horribly.
I bet. Okay, so where I would turn for bread is to try out some of the seeded loaves. There was a seeded loaf that I made for a while, and I'm trying to remember where the recipe was from. But it basically was a long soak with sunflower seeds and pumpkin seeds and chia seeds. And and I'll try to remember and find this recipe and link to it. I have a newsletter.
Okay, and that's a good point. Let's promote that now.
Yep. So I have a newsletter called Dear Bread. And
I love that.
It is mostly a place for me to think about all kinds of stuff, because bread goes with everything, so it goes with all of my thoughts. And I was going to put together a recipe link for tomorrow. And this is it's a Substack newsletter. And I believe that you, I should get the direct link, Ray.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And then you can put it on your website. So we will send Suzanne to that, and that's Dear Bread.
Yep.
That's really cool. So that's Dear...
I'm writing letters to bread all the time.
But your website is...
My own website is my name, amyhalloran.net.
And then how do you get to the Dear Bread?
There's a sign up right there.
Okay, there you go. All right, Suzanne, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Eric writes, I believe the gentleman was referring to opioid peptides, which are said to be in wheat flour, among other foods. Worth a lookup.
Ooh. Okay.
Opioid peptide. Don't be cooking with that, Amy Halloran. Kevin is in Ravenna. Kevin, you're on. Wow, your signal's very bad, Kevin. Give it another shot.
All right, first time calling. Hey, I was wondering, now that marijuana has been legalized in a lot of places, is there anything with a bread coming out with a marijuana base? Or?
Well, I think that there's a lot of... work in the edible food area for cannabis, but I'm not aware of people going for it with bread. As I understand it, marijuana needs to be activated in fat before it goes into baked goods. And so bread doesn't have too much fat in it generally, so I think it would be more like sweets.
Okay, well, Kevin, thanks for that one. We're heading in a strange direction on this program. You know, you come on, you talk about flour, next thing it's heroin and everything else. Roger in Warwick. Roger, you're on.
Hi. I was a couple of years ago in Italy and stopped in Alba, which is a bread baking center, epicenter in Italy. And
about Hey, Roger. Roger in Warwick. Your signal is very bad, sir. Are you on a cell phone?
I am, yeah. Sorry.
Maybe just like turn 90 degrees. Yeah, that's better.
That's good.
Okay, I'm sorry. Did you hear about Altamura?
No, tell us about Altamura.
I was in Altamura, Italy. Altamura, Italy's kind of a bread center in Italy. And one of the bakeries there, very renowned bakery, described that they work with various farmers who produce wheat with different protein content. And they get a very, very high wheat bread. It's like our durum flour, very, very high wheat bread by blending these flours. I was wondering whether you know of any blenders in New York State who produce something equivalent to that, a very high gluten flour from multiple wheat grains.
So first off, you know, bread wheat, like all other foods, has climates that it grows in ideally. And durum wheats are not suited to places that have summers like we do, where it's super moist. Wheat's roots are back in desert climates, and especially durum is generally from an arid area. So we are not doing that. You need a really dry summer to be able to make that kind of super high protein. That said, if you're interested in replicating that, you know, there are plenty of businesses, food businesses, and people who are making things that they want to do with the food that's around us.
Yeah.
Sfaglini Pasta, which is down in the Hudson Valley in Coxsackie, they prioritize using New York State grain and American durum. So they use both flours. They're all organic, and they have a pretty high ratio of using New York State flour with the durum to make their pasta. And pasta is generally understood as just, you know, like you have to have lots of durum and it's not going to take any other. But this company is really committed to regionalized food supplies and being a part of that. So they have 60% New York State wheat with American organic durum. They use organic wheat from New York State as well. But they have this ratio of 60-40. So I'd look into that.
Roger, thanks a lot. We'll take a quick break here. 800-348-2551 is our number. Amy Halloran is our guest. It's the Flower Hour on Vox Pop Food Friday. The email address, once again, is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll get to the email bag and more of your calls coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you. It's Amy Halloran Day, the ambassador of flour on a Food Friday. 800-348-2551 is our number. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll get to more of the emails in a moment. What are these things, these trapezoidal things you have here?
Those are beautiful Swedish ginger snaps.
Ooh, what makes them Swedish?
Well, the recipe comes from a baker who I really enjoy. His name is Brennan Bryce, and I think they're a traditional recipe. It's just so yummy, right? And the way you bake them, I love, 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 because you just roll it into a log, bake it, and cut it.
I love the stuff that you do for a couple reasons. One, I mean, tastes great, but the texture, always everything you make has great texture, and these do as well. They don't snap.
Nope.
But they're really satisfying.
It's that rye flour again.
Really?
Rye, rye, rye.
Well, the cookie didn't stand a chance, and neither will the ginger snap. Now, to the email we go. This one is from Anthony. Tony, we'll call him. Have you ever used cricket flour, and what can you tell us about that product? They are actual ground-up crickets.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tony, for that one.
Tony, yeah, this is fun. So there's a whole line of alternative flours that are getting developed for various environmental reasons.
Yeah.
One of them is upcycled flour, where, Ray, you will love this stuff. They take spent grain, which is what you call a grain after it's been used for brewing or distilling.
Yeah.
They'll take that and turn that into a flour. So next time I should bring in some stuff made from spent grain.
Okay.
Because that's pretty cool.
It reminds me of like nuclear rods that have been used. So are you sure this is okay?
It's totally okay.
Okay.
Feel good and really great. Now cricket flour is actually ground up crickets. It's.
Have you tried it?
I have.
Is it good?
It's fine.
Really?
It's a flour and it gives you the protein boost that, you know, for those of us who don't like eggs, you're always got to, you know, kind of.
You don't like eggs?
I really don't like
eggs. Interesting. So do you bake with eggs?
I bake with eggs.
And you bake with crickets. So tell us about the crickets.
That's about all I know.
Really? But, I mean, have you made bread and such
with
them?
No. They work better put into, like, they do cricket brownie mixes. I haven't used it a whole lot. It's, like, not...
This is amazing.
It's really cool. I mean, we have to really think about how we are going to get our food for the rest of, you know. The
rest of humanity, which could be about an hour at
right.
this point.
We have no idea.
All right. Let's see. We go to regular correspondent Joe. I caught my wife adding yeast to my favorite flatbread recipe. I think she was trying to get a rise out of me. You see? But no, he had a serious question. What is the difference between the yeast I use in making bread versus the yeast I use in making beer?
The yeast in beers are specified strains going for a certain variety of beer or wine. And so the yeast in bread is chosen fairly universally for a certain kind of functionality. The stuff that you're going for when you're fermenting a beverage is also helping to develop flavors that you want to pursue in each of your grain-based beverages.
Mm. All right. This one from Tina. Here's a new history of bread baking. It's called Sourdough Culture. Are you familiar with that book? There's the cover.
I don't know that one. Terrific.
Eric Pallant, A History of Bread Making, Ancient to Modern Bakers.
I'm excited to look at that. I spend a lot of time looking at the history of bread.
How much time a day would you think, proportionally, do you spend thinking about flour or bread?
Well, it depends. Like last week, I was, I spent a couple of days. It's more of like, you know, like days of the week than time in a day.
Yeah.
I'll just get in a bunny hole. So I spent a lot of time looking at milling and baking journals from 1910 and 1911 and 1912. And I was just gone.
Really?
So
does your family look
cooking?
And just say, oh, she's got the look in the eye and we're just going to leave her be?
Everybody else was doing the things that needed to get done. I was looking at
that
bread.
That is great. Amy Halloran joins us today. This email from Karen. Don't forget to share your squash English muffin recipe. It's the best. I made them last night. Karen in Schoharie.
Oh, thanks, Karen. I love making those. Squash baking season is coming right up.
There's a squash baking season.
Yeah, so you take squash, and it's this beautiful ingredient. The sugars that are in, say, a pureed squash, when you add that to any kind of baking, especially a yeasted or a sourdough,
yeah,
it's doing stuff. Much like the barley, you know, much like the malted barley, you get different activities happening. And just a squash bread dough is super, I love the texture. I love the texture.
Well, now, is it okay to wear white during squash baking season? And can we have a martini during that? All right, let's go back to the phones. And Alicia in Little Falls, you're on.
Oh, wow, how exciting. I'm on speakerphone.
You're okay. Your audio is spectacular.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Okay. I want to call in response to the woman asking about grain-free stuff, because I, too, trying to go grain-free.
Okay.
Great.
And there are some good mixes on the market. I won't say any names, but they incorporate almond flour. But I guess it's always important to have arrowroot with it. So there's cassava flour stuff, and there's almond flour mixes, but they're actually pretty good. So thumbs up on that. Keep an eye out for them.
All right. Super. Thanks for that tip.
Alicia,
yeah, and also cassava flour, too, has also become pretty popular. But I'm not sure about the carbon footprint of some of this stuff, though.
Well,
you know, coming from halfway around the world.
All
yeah.
of our
your thoughts
foods
on that?
Are really coming from a lot of places. And, you know, my larger concern with, I guess, any flour is how refined it is. Because there's a lot of processing that goes into making this kind of stuff happen, stripping away any kind of things that are going to spoil. So, you know, but that's okay. That's okay. I think these are devils that we can live with because we're not.
It's a good alternative for the limitations that we have. But also nuts. I've also been grinding up like pecans and doing pecan meal, which you can get at some places, some co-ops.
Yep.
That I happen to work at. Again, I won't mention any names. but those go really good. You can mash them, to make almost like a nice pasty butter and put them into a like a crust pan, you know, for pie baking season. Yep. And that's pretty good, too. So that's an option as well for the grain-free folks that are so limited.
Yep, it's got so much fat, you can really work with that.
All right, Alicia.
Yeah, and that's, yeah. Okay, well, thanks so much. Thanks for your show. Love it. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Amy Halloran joins us. And Robert writes, speaking of sfoglini, have you tried their newish pasta, cascatelli, made from durum semolina flour? Not organic, but pretty incredible.
I haven't tried their cascatelli, but I think it's a pretty fun story of how that all came together with the Sporkful podcast and some kind
Sporkful.
Of...
Sporkful? All right, sfoglini. they do this just to make broadcasters skittish? Okay, fine.
And people who have to write the name over and over again.
All right, fair enough. One email here, and then we'll go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 if you want to call in and talk to Amy Halloran. This is from Lynn regarding the flour conversation. Lynn says, I use quinoa flour all the time for baking many things, but haven't tried using it for bread. It works great for cakes, muffins, cookies, quick breads, etc. I don't see any need for the flour mixes that have xanthan gum and other fillers, but most people don't know about quinoa flour. It's a little more expensive than some, but works great, and it's gluten-free. Have you tried it?
Sure. I love quinoa. I wouldn't swap it out for bread. Like any breads, you really want to follow a recipe for the type of flour you're using.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's just so much that has to happen in the bowl and in the pan. But that's a great flour, and quinoa has a ton of protein, and it's one of those grains,
right,
in quotes, that are pseudo cereals, Ray.
What makes it a pseudo cereal, like buckwheat?
So they are grain-like foods that are close enough in their functionality that they're...
No, I know what you mean, but I mean, what makes quinoa a pseudo...
It's not in the grain family. So
it acts the same way.
Yep. Just behaves. Its flour is similar.
All right. Let's see here. Robin in Conway, Massachusetts. Robin, you're on.
Hi, Amy. I would like you to go circle back to the beginning and talk a little bit about the Southern Grain and the name of the cookbook and the author.
Sure, sure.
If you would do that, it'd be great.
Oh, I'd be happy to wax on for hours about this cookbook. It's called Southern Ground, and the author is Jennifer Lapidus, Lapidus, and she is a miller in Asheville, North Carolina. The publisher is 10 Speed Press. It came out this year, I believe, or, oh my goodness, time is so hard to remember now.
Yes.
It is. The pandemic has really taken any mile markers we used to have. But Carolina Ground is a flour mill that was started by and for a bunch of bakers. And it's a...
Uh-huh.
So the people who are in this cookbook are people who have, you know, supported the mill all the way through. And Jennifer's a beautiful writer, and so she has some really nice profiles of them. And she's also really... This is one of the only cookbooks that's written for stone ground whole grain flour. There's not a lot of cookbooks out there that do that.
And why is that?
Because it's so such a niche food that there's not a lot of writing to this this niche food.
But
product.
There must be recipes, a lot of recipes.
There are recipes, but there's this thing. There was an interesting debate last spring all over sort of food media,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
About, you know, recipes. I don't write a lot of recipes because recipes are standardized. Most media outlets are nationally presenting, and they don't want to be grabbing something that not everybody is going to have access to. They want everybody who's doing their recipes to be able to go to their supermarket and get the brand. So the thing about these flours from these small mills is that they reflect the environment around them. These grains are not blended from millions and millions of fields. they are representative of the agriculture that is right around them.
Can you taste the difference? In other words,
oh, yeah.
can Amy Halloran be blindfolded and say, oh, yeah, well, this bread's made with flour from Asheville, North Carolina?
I can't taste the place, but I can taste the difference if I go side by side. So, for instance, I have some friends who grow grain in eastern Washington. They run a place called the Grain Shed, which is, you know, milling and growing grains right near them. So they can, so say they have some turkey red flour and they send it to me, and I have turkey red from the Midwest, from say Janie's Mill or Meadowlark Mill. And I did that once. I had all of these turkey reds, and they all tasted differently. They all worked a little differently too, in terms of how much water they absorbed, because you know, this is an agricultural product. It's a product of the environment. It's a product of how much sun is out there, the humidity, the soil conditions. Everything goes into it.
Interesting. Robin, do you want to follow up at all?
Yeah, I would love to know. Can you send away for these flowers? I mean, in that cookbook, are there addresses and such?
There are. And I'm pretty sure that Southern Ground, you know, while written by this one cookbook, do they, So, yes.
The answer is yes.
And there's actually, I have a list of mills on my website.
And the website, once again, is?
AmyHalloran.net.
Okay. Robin, thank you so much for the call, and we only have a couple of minutes left here. Why haven't you gathered some of these old recipes and some of these new recipes using old-style wheats and grains? Why haven't you done a cookbook like that?
I'm not sure. I'd made a pamphlet called The Pancake Papers,
right,
that I sell on my website.
Yeah.
And that has a lot, that was a way for me to get all of my information out there about the way this kind of flour, fresh flour from small mills, functions, and, you know, a handful of recipes. We have thought with some of the grain shed groups that I work with.
What's a grain shed group?
So, As I've said, this is all niche stuff, needs a lot of community support, right? So in the Northeast, we have the Northeast Grain Shed Alliance, which I'm a member of, and I try to help support grains. Right now, we have Northeast Grown Grains through that. Right now, we've launched a square foot campaign, and you are going to be able to start seeing our logo, which is the square foot campaign. So, for instance, we have these calculators where you can identify how much grain is in the products that you use. So, a 16-ounce can of IPA.
Yeah.
4 square feet of barley, right?
You're kidding
me. 4
square feet. That's a lot.
Yep. Loaf of bread, 18 square feet.
Amazing.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you how much is in your cookie.
We only have a minute left, but to what end would you calculate that?
So that we can try to visualize all the work that goes into our being able to consume these wonderful products. We're so disconnected from agriculture. You know, in 1900 was the first census in America where half were farmers and half of us were living off farmers. And now it's less than 2% of the population. We can't imagine, and therefore I don't think we can care for our food system. Having tools like this grain shed calculator in your head, we can work for better farming practices and better food.
And there you have done it. Here at the end of the program, write this down. That is where we will begin the next time you are on the program. That's very interesting. Thank you.
Square foot, Ray.
Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you. It was a real pleasure.
My God, it's Friday. I'll have to drink several square feet of grain coming up later on tonight. Support comes from Pekarsky, South Deerfield, Massachusetts. Family-owned since 1948, offering sausages from kielbasa to Italian to bratwurst and smoked meats. Home of New England farm-made sausage. Open 7 days. Pekarskys.com. At the Barn at Egremont Village Inn, presenting the BTUs on Friday, October 15th, Saturday night, Saints and Liars, Sunday night, Pamela Knowles Trio. Information about the shows available at theegremontbarn.com. Once again, Thanks to the incomparable Amy Halloran for being with us today and for bringing all the goodies. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Barb King screens the calls on Friday. I'm Ray Graff. I'll see you Monday at 2 for a Medical Monday. Have a splendid weekend. And, you know, we'll kick off your weekend with a rollicking edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.